Hello out there, and welcome to the Fantasy World Order Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Pat Donovan. Joining me tonight is JP Nocerino.
Hello, everyone.
Everything going, man?
Things going well on a negative 11 degree night in New York City. It makes me feel good to talk about some baseball.
Yeah, warm you up a little bit. I mean, you know, we don't quite have quite as bad as people in the Midwest. I think it's like negative 40 or whatever it is out there. It's insane.
I saw somewhere that it's going to be colder in Chicago tomorrow than in Antarctica. So that's pretty crazy.
Well, everybody stay safe. Stay indoors if you can. Yes. Okay, so tonight we're going to – it's not going to keep you too warm with what we're going to talk about tonight. Yeah. We're doing catchers and relief pitchers. So without further ado, let's kick it off. Let's talk about catchers. Our first and second catcher off the board are extremely close in ADP. We've got JT Realmuto at 56.35 or Gary Sanchez at 57.61. I should add these ADPs are the NFBC ADPs from January 1st through the present day. So are you willing to pay this price for either of them? And if so, why? And which one do you prefer?
All right. I think we're going to agree a lot tonight because, I usually tend to punt catcher. And JT was a guy I got a couple of years ago extremely late, and now he's going number one. It's pretty crazy for catchers. I think I'd rather have Gary at this stage. I'm not going to – you know, my strategy is usually never to reach on a catcher early, so I'm probably not going to be that guy. But if I'm going to pick either one of the price, it's going to be Gary. I think the small, you know, speed help that you get from Realmuto isn't worth the monster season that you can get from Gary if he's healthy. I think he is gonna bounce back and have a much better season. That average doesn't scare me that much. I think he just had an overall down year, the injury, and you know the fans were getting on him. I think he's really gonna bounce back and have a monster season. If JT ends up in Cincinnati, like it sounds like he's gonna, I think he'll be very good. But I'd still rather take Gary at this price.
Yeah, give me Sanchez. I mean, he's really the only catcher I could see cracking 30 homers.
Exactly.
Last year was bad. A lot of it was really significant poor luck. The 197 BABIP is the fourth lowest in the last 10 years for players with 300 plate appearances in a season. Wow. So, I mean, even with last year's terrible BABIP, his career is 272. So, I mean, you're talking 80 points. Or nearly 80 points from his career average to where he was last year. You know, you mentioned he had a couple of injuries. He had off-season shoulder surgery as well. You know, it's not like he didn't deserve a down year because he did. There was some poor batted ball quality. But I think really you can tie that to partly the injury equation and part pressing. You know, like he just looked like a hitter at times that was just trying to – write his season with one swing of the bat way too often. You know, and as far as Realmuto goes, even with upgraded surroundings, I think he lacks the sort of upside that Sanchez possesses. I mean, in earnest, like I really view Realmuto more as like the best of a bad bunch sort of option. You know, he's got high teens to 20 homer power, a 275 average, a handful of steals, good volume. It's a nice player, but I just fail to see how it's a top 60 selection, even if he moves. Because if he does move, he's going to move to a situation where he's probably not going to be hitting in a prime lineup spot. I mean, if he ends up in Houston, I can't imagine he's going to be above sixth in that lineup. If he's in Cincinnati, he's not going to hit above sixth. So, I mean, it's not like moving somewhere is going to provide him with some kind of, you know, ideal run production role. I mean, obviously it will go up from where it is in Miami, but I don't know. I kind of fail to see the upside that warrants a top 60 selection. Whereas when you look at Gary, you know, he does something that no other catcher can do.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. Like you still don't know where JT's going to end up. If he stays in, I mean, it doesn't sound like he's going to stay in Miami, but that could be, you know, a big downer too if he's stuck there.
Yeah, it can. It can be a huge suck on his value. You know, I mean, to an extent, though. I mean, he's going to hit – if he's in Miami, he's going to see plenty of volume. He's going to hit probably third or fourth. And, you know, to the extent that the lineup stinks around him, yeah, but he's going to see more at-bats there than he would see anyplace else, just based on, you know, lineup turnover and whatnot. So, I mean, there's sort of pluses and minuses to that. But to me, it's just there's not enough juice there to make me want to take him at this point, whereas Gary is got, you know, that plus power tool in a very plus lineup that makes him very appealing, at least as a chance to take. So let me just clarify, you're not looking to take either one of these guys at cost, though.
I'm not, but if I was, it's definitely going to be Sanchez. I can justify Sanchez a lot more than Real Muto.
Okay, the ADP is a little high for me on Sanchez, but I could see myself buying in around 5 to 10 picks later. So I'm not, you know, outside the ballpark on him. I'm not close on Real Muto. I've got Real Muto about 25 to 30 spots later than this. Okay, let's move to the third catcher, Salvador Perez, 108.82. So already a significant drop off the first two. And Sal's really on kind of on an island by himself. He's got 50 picks from Sanchez, and he's 26 from the fourth overall catcher, Wilson Ramos. So what do you make of Sal Perez as the third overall catcher?
So, you know, in our league, Sal is always a polarizing figure. Just looking at his career, I can't believe he's only 28 years old. I feel like he's been around forever. So he's still relatively young for a catcher.
Well, that's something that you really have to think about with him, too. I mean,
yeah,
he's not only has he caught a lot of games, but he also had those two deep postseason runs. So there's a lot of mileage at this point.
Yeah, no, there is some mileage, but he's not. But I just off the top of my head, I figured he was like 32. It just feels like he's a lot older than he is. I guess you know, he kind of runs slow. He's kind of a lumbering guy, but he's got 20 homers and 20 doubles. Plus each of the last four seasons, he's been pretty consistent as they come for a catcher. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the 50 picks that separates him between him and Real Muto, he might actually have a better season than Real Muto. So I like him a lot. I think he's as consistent as they come. You wish he'd, you know, walk more and strike out less, but the average, I mean, it was 235 last year, but other than last year, it's been pretty respectable. You can live with what he gives you at average. I think the power is real. The guy can just hit. And he's, you know, he's only going to be 29. I think he can have another solid season.
Yeah, I mean, Sal's got a lot of volume here. And it's really difficult to find another player that can sort of match it. Because the Royals can play him at DH when he's not handling catching duties. He's got the 20-plus homer pop. You know, you outlined, and you're correct, that there's just not much to speak of in the way of plate discipline or patience. But he doesn't have a bad K rate because of that aggressiveness, so he can live with that. The value is going to rise or fall on the batting average. The BABIP was in the 240s last year, and that's below the career average. And the really only explanation for that is just simply bad luck. So I don't mind projecting him back up around 260. Ton of hard contact, which is great. He certainly has his appeal. It's just whether you want to pay up for Sal's floor, which is what we saw last year, probably about 235, 240, 20s bombs. Or if you want to wait a few rounds and take your pick of the big middle, because there's still, you know, a lot of good options on the board at 108. So you are forgoing some quality players for the sake of grabbing that sort of floor. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that the ceiling is that high at this point. I mean, what's the best case? 270, 25 bombs. Now, I mean, yeah, that's awesome for a catcher, but still it's not, you know, like when we were talking about Sanchez, you know, there's a level there. And, you know, I just don't know that Sal's got enough juice in him at this point, especially in KC, even with all that volume, that I'm going to be buying him in front of some of the other guys we're going to talk about. So, I mean, like, what do you think about the price on Sal? Are you
I think it's, I mean, like, if you take him there, I have no problem with it, but I'm still not going to do it. At 108, there's definitely guys there I take over him at other positions. I'd probably, you know, I like to hoard pitchers. I'd probably take another starter there, and I just wait. But like I said, I do think it's possible he has a better year than Real Muto. So if you take him, I'm not going to criticize you for it, but it's just not going to be my move.
Okay, let's rank the next group. We've got Wilson Ramos, fourth, 134.71. Wilson Contreras, 139.82. Yadier Molina, 140.22. Buster Posey, 143.01. And Yasmani Grandal. So those are your fourth through eighth catchers. Tell me about the guy that you like the best among the group, but also give me a ranking of them.
So I think I have to go with Yadier just for... You know, the guy, it's crazy. I've never owned this guy. I was thinking about it. I don't think I've ever owned him, but he's owned me throughout his entire career. It's crazy.
In both a fantasy and a real life sense.
No, exactly. He really has. And we know he's up there in age, but the guy, I mean, he's still out there almost every day playing. He's put up really good seasons, and it really just has to do with the guys, the other guys that you named in this group. I don't think I could trust any one of them. You know, Posey's getting up there. He's battled injury. Ramos, I'm terrified of, if you want to call it my pessimism as a Met fan. But, you know, like, Met players getting injured. He's always injured. It's like the planets aligning for him to just, for you to draft him and him just never play. He played 131 games in 2016. That's the most he's ever played in the season. We know he can hit. If you tell me he's going to be healthy the whole season, I'm probably putting Ramos at the top of the list. But I can't guarantee that. So I think it's got to be Molina. He's extremely consistent. He's learned how to hit, you know, with power as he's gotten older. 20 home runs last year. If he gives you that again, I think he's fine where you're taking him in at this spot. But if you want me to rank them, I'm probably going Molina, Posey, Grandal, Contreras, and Ramos.
Wow. Okay.
I'm terrified of Ramos. Terrified.
So we're sort of all over the board here because I've got them Grandal, Ramos, Contreras, Posey, Molina.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes to show you that these guys all belong together and you can sort of pick your favorite. I don't agree with that. I don't think they all stink. I think that I normally am someone that's either I'm buying the very top end of catcher or I'm waiting. And I think this year I'm looking in this sort of middle group. I really do. And Grandal is my favorite. He's got a good shot at volume in Milwaukee. He's showcased fantastic power for a few seasons. And that's got a shot to go from like 2025 to 2530 in Milwaukee because the park is so good. And the lineup is obviously great. You know, he's going to be able to drive in Kane, Yelich, Shaw, Braun, Aguilar. So I do think that Grandal has a tinge more upside than he's had in recent years. There's no looking over his shoulder this year with, you know, Austin Barnes or whoever stealing playing time.
Yeah.
But, you know, this group has it's got some nice floor to it. I mean, Grandal probably in the worst case is like a 235, 20 homer guy. Ramos, you mentioned, if he's healthy, he's probably going to hit pretty well. You can probably pencil him in for like 270 and somewhere between 15 to 20 homers. I think he's going to see a good amount of volume. Contreras had a down year, but I mean, last year he was talked about as a top two or three catcher. So he's still young enough that he can bounce back. Posey, you know, we have to wait and see what the health situation is going to be. He's coming back off hip surgery. He had a down year, but you know, you can tie that to the injury, but he's also getting up there and he's caught a lot of games and et cetera. So he's sort of the risky one among this group, but he's also the guy that could hit, you know, 310 with 15 bombs and be a fantastic value at this price. And then Molina, yeah, like, you know, like you said, it like super steady, like 15, 20 homers, 265, pretty good run production. But like Posey, he's getting up there in years and he's got a lot of miles on him. And, you know, it's possible that the wheels fall off at this point, given his age. You know, I'm not betting on it, but it does give him a little bit more risk than Grandal, Ramos, and Contreras in my mind, at least in terms of the production. You know, I mean, you can say what you want about injury. I don't really like to worry too much about injury because I don't think that I'm qualified enough to sort of predict those sort of things. I think a lot of times it's sort of fluky. So I'm not as concerned about Ramos, but I am a little concerned about age, especially at a position that doesn't really age well. Okay, let's talk about what's left. Yan Gomes, ninth. ADP of 232.13, a big drop-off to the Nats catcher from that group. So we're talking almost 100 picks, right around 90 picks between him and Grandal. Are you buying the Nats' new catcher, even though they've added Kurt Suzuki?
Okay, I'm going to try not to sound redundant for the next half of this show, but if you've waited this long to take a catcher, you can wait a little longer. None of these guys really excite me. I mean, when I step up to the board on draft day, I know there's going to be somebody I want more at 230 than Yan Gomes. I'm not buying a big season. I can see him being decent, and he could be a valuable player. But with the loss of Murphy and Harper in that lineup, you really wonder, what it's going to be like. He's been decent, but he strikes out a ton. Average isn't amazing. He bet 266 last year. It's decent, but in the National League now, he's going to face tougher pitching. NL East had a lot of pitching. It just doesn't excite me. I wish I could get more excited about Yan Gomes. I don't think Kurt Suzuki will really, eat into his playing time, but still it doesn't excite me.
See, I do think that Kurt Suzuki might eat into his playing time. I mean, Suzuki's been really good in a part-time role in Atlanta the last few years. He's capable defensively as well. But, I mean, even if he wasn't, even if you take that out of the equation, you said Gomes is going to get the volume to be a potential top 10 catcher. The production just has kind of been all over the place for him. He's had some really bad batting average seasons, and the power has sort of been touch and go. I mean, yeah, there is a scenario where he hits 265 and 20 bombs. But there's also a scenario where he hits 13 bombs and 215 and plays, 100 games. So the run and the RBI production isn't there. He's not my favorite on the board still. I'm a little surprised that he's here. I mean, I understand that he finished inside the top 12 last year. So, he's sort of just tracking along with his ranking from last year. But to me, it's not a great selection at this price. There are definitely guys I like better that are still on the board. Okay, let's move to the 10th, Danny Jansen. And we got a 235.04 ADP on him, so three picks after Gomes. Russell Martin out of town. Jansen seems to have the opportunity in Toronto. Is he your target if you miss out on the big middle?
I think he is. I mean, it's late enough in the draft where you could Yan Gomes, I don't feel like is a sexy, risky pick, but I feel like Jansen can really blossom and, prove to be a worthy pick here. I'll take one from your book. The hitting metrics looked pretty good. He showed a decent eye at the plate, didn't strike out too much. He had over 40 extra base hits if you total the minor league and major league stats. He's going to have a ton of playing time and, kind of might be under the radar on a team that's not that good. Maybe he'll just relax and have a really solid rookie season. I think he's a guy to definitely keep an eye on, and I'm definitely going to punt catcher and keep my eye on him late.
Yeah, I'm not normally one to buy in on young catchers. It's a very difficult position to play and to learn at the big league level. But almost because of the state of catcher, I'm sort of forced to like Jansen at this price, and I do like him. I mean, you mentioned the plate discipline is very good, suppresses strikeouts pretty well, gets on base at a good clip, and hits for a decent average. He had 15 homers and 5 steals across 455 plate appearances last year. Guts across the majors and the minors. He's in the AL East. He's got a pull approach. So there might be a little bit of upside for the power. you know, it's pretty likely that given the skills that he's shown plus the volume that's going to be available to him, that he ends up being a plus contributor. It might not be a smooth ride, you know, as he sort of adjusts to the league, but, you know, I think that the Blue Jays are going to give him every opportunity. I think they've made that plain by trading Martin. So, you know, good approach. There's some ceiling here that I like, and I think the volume is pretty safe. So, you know, I think that, you know, like his floor might be like a top 15 type catcher based on the skills that he's shown. And he's got some upside beyond that, given the situation. So, yeah, I'm in on Jansen at this price. I think he's one of the better bets, and I definitely have him in front of Gomes. Okay, Willens Astudio. I have no idea if I said that right.
Susu Studio.
Yeah, we call him Susu Studio. 235.58. He's hit pretty much everywhere and started to tap into his power in Winter League, but he might be the Twins' third catcher. Where do you think he plays, and does he play enough to return this sort of value?
You know, it's just such a weird player to discuss because what we all saw from him, we liked last year. And in September or October last year, if I told you that this guy wasn't going to have a guaranteed job, you'd think I was crazy because he looked like he was really a young player that was, you know, coming into his own and ready to have a really nice season in 2019. Yeah, I think he's going to play. Based on what I read, they want to find the bats for him. I think he's going to play mostly catcher once we get more towards the summer. And if he continues to hit, they're going to have to keep him in the lineup. But, you know, there's talk of him, you know, spelling guys all over the field. You know, they talked about playing him literally everywhere. He only struck out 3 times last year in 29 games. That's pretty good in the 97 plate appearances. He had an 887 OPS. Small sample size, but the guy definitely showed some discipline. He had a 355 average. He hit a lot. And I know he hurt you late in the season and helped, you know, the guy in our league win a championship. So he's definitely a guy you want to keep an eye on. But the playing time is really a big factor here. I'm probably not going to take him just because – I don't, you know, you might be taking a dead player if he doesn't play enough in the first couple months. But I mean, if someone wants to jump on him, I guess you have to. He's really shown a lot of promise.
Well, I mean, you know, context is sort of king here, right? So, I mean, if you're a 12-team mixer and you like the upside and he's the 11th catcher off the board, you know, you're going to be able to find a guy that you would take over him on the waiver wire, right? Like you're one of your alternatives that you would consider is going to be there for you after the draft. So I don't really have a problem with you taking the shot, but I just do have my doubts about sort of him finding his way into enough volume to really be relevant. I mean, he's played catcher, he's played third base. Maybe they can play him in a corner outfield spot or first base in a pinch. The versatility may work, but I mean, are they just sort of forcing the versatility for the sake of trying to get him into the lineup? And then, you know, at what point do they say this guy is just a defensive liability at certain positions and stop playing him there? You know, he gritted out okay behind the plate, but they've paid Jason Castro, and he's a plus defender behind the dish, and he's got pretty good patience. So, I mean, he's not like a complete slouch for a major league catcher. Mitch Garver was also a guy that saw time behind the plate last year, and he was actually pretty good. So, I mean, and I don't know if they're going to send him back down. So there's a possibility that Willens is a third catcher as opposed to a second catcher. And, you know, that's sort of where it gets pretty iffy for me. If Garver goes down to start the year and Williams is the backup catcher, then you can kind of see the path. You know, he can catch 2 days a week and then they can find a spot for him in the lineup 2 other days during the week. And then that's sort of catcher-esque volume, to the point where you don't really have to worry about it because most catchers are getting a day or two off every week anyway. But I mean, in terms of skills, he's a complete unicorn. He doesn't strike out. He doesn't walk at all. So he's extremely aggressive, but the contact ability is amazing. I am intrigued by the fact that, you know, he hit for a little more power in Winter League. You know, he's obviously fun to watch play because he's such a unique body type. You know, it's a lot of fun to watch him play because he's such a unicorn. But at the same time, you know, if you're in a deeper league and this is a guy you're relying on, I don't know if I want to rely on him, given the fact that, I mean, he could see 200 at bats this year. You know, like there's a very real zero floor here for him at this price. So it's got quite a bit of variance and volatility to the pick. So if I'm in a deeper league and this is a guy I'm relying on, I don't think I want to rely on him. Okay, so Francisco Mejia, 12th, 242.25, might be the second consecutive backup catcher with Austin Hedges still in town. Do you think Mejia is going to get the playing time to matter? And what do you make of his skills?
So everything you read makes it sound like they are going to split time or he is going to be the backup to start. I think Hedges is going to start most of the games in April and May. I could see Mejia really taking over the lion's share of playing time as the season progresses. And if he shows promise, he's starting to hit. He's starting to become the player everyone hopes he's going to become. I definitely see him having a much better impact in the second half of the season. But the power is still really expected to improve. He's still a very young kid. You'd wish he'd show a little plate discipline and the strikeout numbers would improve. And they still might. Like I said, he's still very, very young. I think he's worth a pick here because – you know, it is pretty late, and that possible breakout is still looming. If it's a keeper league, he's definitely worth the pick, you know, because he could be a very nice player for years to come. Going to keep your eye on him, but I don't expect him to have a major impact in the first half of the season. I think it's definitely going to come in the later half, and I think it will come eventually. But, it's going to be a little test of patience with him.
All right, hypothetical. If he goes to Miami in a deal for Real Muto, where is he on this list? Is he above Jansen?
I probably keep him in the same spot because I don't think he's going to hit right away. I still think he's got some growing pains to go through. And in Miami, it's not a sexy scenario where he's going to be in a great lineup. It makes him more intriguing, sure, but I probably put him over Astudillo, but I probably still take Jansen over him.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I mean, if I could guarantee Mejia playing time, I'd be much more interested at this price. To the extent you're looking at five categories, he's sort of similar to Jansen. I think that he would hit for a pretty good average to start with. 15, 20 homer pop would be about what I would expect. He wouldn't steal a handful of bags like Jansen would, but if he's 50-50 with Hedges, it's just not good enough. And the lineup's not special. So, like, it's just not going to be enough to make up for it. I mean, if he was in, some sort of grade-A lineup where, the run production might be there, even though he's not seeing quite the volume that some other catchers are seeing, you could maybe buy into it. But the fact is San Diego is just not a good lineup right now, despite the fact that they have some nice sleepers, in the outfield and around the diamond. But it's not an advantageous situation. So, I mean, without the volume in a non-plus situation, it just seems as though you're, buying a lottery ticket and hoping that he finds his way into 75% of the appearances at some point. Or throughout the season. I mean, simply that he just takes the job from Hedges and never gives it back. That's certainly within the range of outcomes. But again, in a league where I absolutely need him to do that, I just don't feel comfortable taking that chance. If I'm in a one catcher league and I'm taking this guy as a flyer, and there's going to be similar floor options available to me on the waiver wire, I'm perfectly fine with taking the chance, giving him a few weeks and seeing what happens, and then moving on if I need to move on. But if I absolutely need him, he's not the guy I'm taking at this point. Okay, 13th, Mike Zunino, 242.39. Change of scenery, going to Tampa. Do you think that the Rays can help the catcher with the strikeout issues, or do you simply have to resign yourself to a bad batting average at this point?
I think we know what he is at this point. I don't see any reason to believe the strikeouts or the plate discipline is going to improve. But I guess if you've waited this long in the draft, you could do worse at catcher. He's not a terrible pick. It's not sexy at all. He's going to a worse lineup. You know, he was hitting behind, Seager and Cruz and Cano all these years. Now he's in a Tampa lineup that is just not as eye-catching. But, he's hit 20 home runs each of the last 2 years. We know he's got pop. If you waited this long, like I said, you could stick him in and probably hope for 20 home runs, but I wouldn't expect much else in terms of average or any of the counting stats. Again, he's not sexy, but I guess you could do worse. It's hard for me to get excited about Mike Zunino, especially in Tampa. I'm really trying to, but I just don't see any room for improvement. I think we know what he is. I think he'll give you his 20 bombs and be consistent, but he's not going to improve.
Yeah, I think you sort of have to resign yourself to the bad batting average when it comes to Zunino, unless, he finds his way into a second ridiculous BABIP season. A couple of years ago, he found his way to like a 355 BABIP out of nowhere. And that was really at the root of a season where the batting average was bearable. I don't see anything regarding Zunino that indicates that Tampa is expecting some sort of change in approach or is going to try to change the approach. He may benefit from the AL East. The power might tick up to upper 20s. But you're absorbing Joey Gallo batting average with that without the Joey Gallo upside. It's sort of a team construction pick. If you've got the batting average base and you can absorb it, I think he's going to have pretty good volume there. You can take the pick, but again, it's going to be a really big drain on that batting average. And I don't know that it's worth it for, a few more homers over some other guys. So I'm not looking to draft Mike Zunino. But I will acknowledge that I'm going to keep my eye on him in spring training to see if there's anything different that maybe Tampa was working on him with that's keeping him quiet, that's been kept quiet. Sometimes change of scenery can lead to those sort of things. Okay, 14th, Jorge Alfaro, 244.79. We're over 500 plate appearances into his career, and he's sporting a 405 BABIP. That's not going to maintain. Do you think he can get the strikeouts under control enough to make him worthwhile?
I don't see why he would. He's playing in Citizens Bank where people just love to free swing. He's another young player that's come up, and you always hear the old timers talking about it, how times have changed and nobody cares about strikeouts anymore. And, teams really don't. You'd like a guy to strike out less, but they're not going to harp on it. As long as the guy's hitting for, decent pop and contributing, they'll let him strike out as much as possible. He's hitting in a good lineup. He's towards the bottom of the lineup. I guess at this point in the draft, it's not a bad idea taking a shot at him. He's got some talent. He looks like a decent player, but I think I'd probably take Wellington Castillo, who we're going to talk about next, over him. I'm just not so excited about Alfaro, so I'm not going to continue too much more. Strikeout numbers are pretty scary, and it's crazy. I mean, I'm really not trying to kill the guy, but it's just the catching position is so down when this guy's 14th on the board. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts can't get worse. It's 36% K rate, and he earns it. I mean, the swinging strike rate's over 20%, which was pretty stunning to me. That's a real problem, and that means that the K rate's no fluke. And he doesn't really have much of a walk rate to speak of. So he's going to have to make substantial improvements just to get his head above water. So, no, I'm not going to bet on Alfaro. Another thing is the Phillies are looking to compete. And if Alfaro doesn't improve, he's going to find himself on the bench. Last year they went out and they got Wilson Ramos to send him to the bench. So this is an area of the team where they feel like they can improve. And they've already shown it once. So if Alfaro doesn't sort of start to get his act together and start to clean up his approach. You know, he might be a guy that sees a lot of volume in the first half, but then is a second catcher on his own team for the second half. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But I mean, on the plus side, the power is very much for real and the batted ball skills are promising, but if he's not making more contact, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, there is some upside here. If he can find his way to more contact, if he can find his way to a little more discipline, it's not a huge leap for him to become pretty useful pretty quickly. It's just that he's pretty far removed from where he needs to be able to reach that sort of level. It wouldn't be a small step forward. It would be a pretty big leap for him to improve to the extent he needs to improve to sort of reach that upside. Okay, 15th, Wellington Castillo, 253.32. You know, JP, you mentioned that you liked him better than Alfaro. Last year was broken up by a suspension. Could you see Castillo bounce back in 2019 and be a value at this price?
I really can. I could see him being a solid contributor and definitely a value at this price. I'm in my mind, I'm just kind of going to throw out last year totally. Like, I'm just not going to worry about it. The suspension on a bad team. I'm going to look at the player from 2017. And I think that's what you're going to get close to. Whether you think the PEDs, you know, aided him a lot, and now he's going to, you know, really not be able to hit for so much power. I don't really buy that. He hit 20 home runs in 96 games in 2017. That wasn't Camden Yards, but if, you know, he played another 40 games, let's say, you could definitely see him hitting at least 5 more homers, and that's 25 homers from a catcher, and you're taking him at the 15th, you know, ranking spot, and it's very late in the draft. I think at this point, especially someone like me, if you punted catcher all the way, you know, down here, you definitely do worse, and I really do think a bounce-back season is possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like this price. You know, I actually view him closer to Jansen and the big middle than some of the other guys we've talked about over the last few. It's a boring profile, but it's 15, 20 homers, 260. You know, and that's what you really want to guarantee yourself, and I think that's what Castillo brings. You know, you mentioned the fact that the 20-homer season came in Camden. He's not in a bad park to hit in Chicago. So, you know, it's not like he's playing in Petco. And, you know, he's probably hitting somewhere within reach of Jose Abreu in that lineup. And they've been tied to some elite free agent hitters, so maybe the lineup around him gets a little better. Yeah, I actually think Castillo's a little underrated here. Considering the sort of safe bat he brings at the position where a lot of guys are suffering from significant question marks. Okay.
It's going to be an interesting draft if you and I are 10 beers deep and fighting over Wellington Castillo in the middle rounds. It's going to be pretty funny, but I have a feeling that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
That's how ugly the position is. That's, you know, quite frankly, a statement on the position.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Okay, so let's move beyond the top 15. You know, I want to take some time and talk about Francisco Cervelli and Elias Diaz. What do you think of cycling the pair in and out if Cervelli stays put? You know, I'm talking specifically in leagues where you can set your lineup on a daily basis. Do you want to walk with Elias if Cervelli is traded? And where would he fit on the list above if that did happen?
Yeah, I think if Cervelli was traded, you have to definitely move Diaz up a little bit. He's shown a lot of potential last year. I don't love cycling both players because I don't love using two spots in my roster for catcher. Last year, I had one catcher all year, or one catcher on my team all year, and I had a pretty solid season. I made the playoffs, and I'm probably going to stick with that again. I don't love having two roster spots taken up by catchers. But if you have the room to spare, then I definitely see it being possible. Cervelli was amazing for me last year when I had him. When he was healthy, he was hitting. And early in the year, he was really good. He had a high average. He was hitting home runs. It's interesting to, you know, cycle both of them. I don't know if it's my strategy, but I couldn't see it as a negative if somebody wanted to.
But if Cervelli is traded, I definitely think Diaz moves up closer to the top 10 in catches.
Yeah, I agree with you on Diaz. I think that he's extremely interesting if a trade goes down. You know, there's high teens pop there, plus average, decent patience, good plate skills. You know, I mean, it's very format specific. You know, I wouldn't do it in a two catcher league because I think you're sort of capping your volume. But if it's a one catcher league and you've got the bench spots to do it, they posted 22 bombs, 170 runs plus RBIs, and hit close to 270 last year. The run production is particularly impressive, but all you have to do is think about that lineup. I mean, they regularly hit in the middle of it. So, and there's not really a reason for them to move down in that lineup. They didn't add any sort of bat that would push them from the middle of that lineup. So, you know, I think whenever either of them plays, they're going to hit somewhere pretty decent in the lineup. And yeah, I mean, if you play both of them, you get that sort of elite volume that you really struggle to get from guys outside the very, very top end of catcher. So, I mean, it has its pluses and minuses. You know, obviously you mentioned the fact that, you know, you're using two roster spots on catcher and you are, but, you know, it's sort of a stream spot too. You know, no one else is rushing out to pick up the Pirates backup catcher. So really what you're doing is you're holding Cervelli and you're just sort of trying to figure out when they're going to play Diaz. You know, granted, it's going to take moves and management, and it's a bit of a pain in the butt, but it's also a strategy that can work in that particular format. Okay, let's move to Austin Barnes, a trendy sleeper last year. He had a very disappointing year, though. Do you expect him to see a majority of the starts in L.A.? And if he's seeing the majority of starts, can he make good on his promise from last year?
I guess he's going to see the majority of the starts, but I've never been as high on this guy as most people are. He has 12 total home runs in his career. I'm not buying the hype again this year. I think he might eventually turn into a solid player and be useful later in the season. But, you know, I'm not going to be the guy to take him. I think Russell Martin, you know, heading over there, he's definitely going to be the veteran that they brought back to, you know, work with the pitchers. Even though the pitching staff is great, but I think, you know, they want to keep him in there a lot. I think they're going to rotate both guys freely, and I don't think you can trust either one of them. If I had to, you know, choose between this pair and the pair we mentioned from the Pirates, I'd definitely take the Pirates pair. If I was going to cycle either one of the groups, it would definitely be Cervelli and Diaz over these two.
Yeah, I would agree with that last point. I'm a bit higher on Barnes than you are. I just think it's a little bit of recency bias that all of a sudden Austin Barnes is terrible. After last year, everybody going absolutely insane and in some cases taking him over Yasmani Grandal. You know, Barnes offers some power, some speed, and some speed at the catcher position is useful. He knows how to take a walk. He had a really, really rough year last year. But, you know, I don't think he's as bad as he was last year, nor do I think he's as good as he was in 2017. You know, I could see, you know, 12 bombs, 8 steals, 250 with good on-base ability if he was to play full-time, you know, and full-time being relative for a catcher. But that's really where the issue comes in is I think you're right. I think that they traded for Martin with the intention of playing him quite a bit. Now, Martin and Barnes are both pretty athletic for catchers and can play outside of the catcher position. And the Dodgers love to utilize their versatility. So, you know, even if it's a 1A, 1B type situation, they might see a little bit more volume than you know, a catcher situation like in Atlanta where McCann and Flowers are projected to split time because they can each play around the infield and they might get, you know, a handful of starts there over the course of a season. But yeah, the Martin trade really ruined Barnes in my eyes. Now, if they've been linked to Realmuto as well. So now if Realmuto gets traded to goes straight to LA, and Barnes goes back to Miami, and he's seeing full time, he becomes much more interesting, and he's in that sort of Wellington Castillo conversation for me. You know, Castillo obviously being a little bit safer and a little bit more floor than Barnes, but Barnes having sort of an intriguing, unique skill set for a catcher. So, you know, it's just something to keep in mind. Carson Kelly was likely to be the everyday catcher in Arizona. He had disastrous results in St. Louis, but he was part of the Goldschmidt trade. Do you think you could see him bounce back and make good on his prospect promise in the desert?
Yeah, I don't really see him making good on that promise. He's got 18 total hits in 63 career games. None of those are home runs. He looks like a guy that's just been overmatched by big league pitching. And is, you know, it's a small sample size, but over the course of, you know, three little clips of playing time in three seasons, he just hasn't hit at all. Like I said, the power, he hasn't shown any power. He's had four doubles in three seasons. It's only 63 games, like I said, but still the power is just not showing itself. And, you know, the lineup loses Goldschmidt. So, you know, Arizona's obviously not going to have as potent as a lineup as it had last year. I think it's possible the breakout happens, but if it does, you can just pick him up midseason. I don't think you have to waste a draft pick on Carson Kelly.
Yeah, I think in most cases you're right. I mean, you know, one catcher leagues, he's not going to be an asset that people are going to chase. So you can sort of keep your eye on him, and if you see signs of a breakout occurring, you can scoop him up. So, I mean, if you're punting catcher, he's sort of a watch list guy in those one catcher leagues. In two catcher leagues, I'm a little bit more intrigued, but I am a little worried about the volume. You know, they still got Alex Avila there. Kelly is obviously the future, but I wouldn't be shocked if they sort of ease him in, given the fact that he has struggled so much at the big league level. I'm not terribly worried about what is a pretty small sample at the major league level. I mean, you know, those sort of things happen. Not all prospects come up and excel right away. And he's, and I mentioned this earlier when I talked about Jansen, you know, catching is incredibly difficult and at the major league level. And a lot of times catching prospects come up and struggle with the bat in their first instance because they're devoting so much time to learning the staff and learning how to play the position defensively at this level. Kelly doesn't present any sort of like crazy offensive ceiling. I mean, he's probably in the best case, like a 260, 265, 15 homer guy. And, you know, that's sort of optimistic, but I could see that outcome, you know, at the top end of his range of outcomes this year. So I think he's worth watching, but, you know, really, to me, it's going to be a two catcher format, and it's going to be dependent on how the playing time sort of breaks down in Arizona. Because if he's behind Avila, I don't know that I'm terribly interested. Okay, I think we've run the gamut on catchers. Let's move it to relief pitchers, and I've got some general topics that I just wanted to discuss. You know, so, I mean, you and I are both of the mind that you probably shouldn't pay a premium for a closer, right?
Yeah, we're from the same school. I was going to say, I'm sorry if I don't seem excited in this next part. But, I mean, we both come from the school of thought where you don't pay for saves. You and I have never taken a relief pitcher high in the draft, and I'm sure that'll continue.
So, all right. I mean, since we've kind of established that we're not the types to pay for your elite closers, you know, when do you start to look? Are you looking at pick 60, or you're looking at pick 80, or you're looking at pick 100?
It's usually, you know, past pick 100 for me, because I'm not taking them on any inside the top 10. You know, round 12, 13, 14 is where I start to look. I usually group them together, where I'll either go back to back reliever in like rounds 14 and 15 and get two solid guys that, you know, have secure jobs but aren't amazing, and then, you know, pick on the crop of what's left in the at the end of the draft, and pick up a few guys that either have a shot at, you know, stealing the job or just on a bad team.
Do you have any names in mind where you're starting to shop? You know, like, is there like a cutoff line where you say to yourself, all right, well, I've got to start to look now.
I'd probably say around Iglesias is probably at the top of that list. I mean, I probably wouldn't get him because he'd probably go ahead of where I'm looking, but more like Doolittle, Leclerc around there.
Yeah, I think we're in the same ballpark. You know, I'm sort of waiting. You know, I am very intrigued by Brad Hand. I will admit that, but he's a bit expensive. Yeah, I mean, once we're in that Doolittle, Iglesias, sort of range, that's where I, you know, there are five or six guys there that I sort of like. Kirby Yates is another one off the top of my head. So, I mean, I think that's where I want to be shopping for my first closer and then sort of take another one a few rounds later. You know, I'm thinking Archie Bradley. I'm thinking Trevor May, if he's going to get the saves in Minnesota. You have to see what the reports are. Maybe Leclerc falls, Ken Giles. You know, I wouldn't mind taking a shot on Cody Allen on the bounce back in Anaheim. You know, if it came to that, one of the Phillies guys, they're supposed to split. One of the Braves guys, I wouldn't mind taking a shot on either. So, I mean, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez or David Robertson or AJ Minter or Aroldis Vizcaíno, you know, I don't really have a problem sort of getting a 50-50 share guy as my second guy, because I think there's a lot of that this year. And really all I want is a quality arm that's going to get some saves, because I think through the year in most leagues, you're going to be able to find another closer at some point via trade or just attrition or, you know, playing the waiver wire and being a little bit anticipatory. I just don't like to freak out too much about saves at the draft table, because I think that there's always a path that emerges to finding them through one avenue or another. You know, I just want a decent base and I'll find my way the rest of the way, I think. Okay. So how many setup guys do you like to carry as ratio boosters? And as a rule of thumb, do you target the ones with the best skills or the ones with the highest likelihood of getting save opportunities?
All right, so this is going to be an interesting discussion, because I know we come from different thoughts here. If I'm going to carry an extra relief pitcher, it's got to be a guy that has a chance of getting saves. I'm not big on, you know, the ratio boosters. If I'm going to carry that extra pitcher, you know, I love to hoard starting pitchers. I'd love to just keep a terrible starting pitcher on my roster in hopes that he gets hot, and, you know, which I've gotten lucky with before in the past. So I don't really like to keep too many, you know, middle relievers. It's got to be a guy that has a chance at getting saves. I'm not big on the high K guys. Like I said, I'd rather just have another starting pitcher. That's just my theory. I know you have a completely different one, but that's just how I construct my team.
Yeah, no, I'm big on setup guys with, you know, great skills. And by great skills, you know, obviously K rate is first and foremost. Combined with a good walk rate, sort of the guys that can help you across ERA, WHIP, and Ks, and, you know, any other ratio categories you might have in the pitching realm, is where I'm looking. And I do want the guys with the elite skills first and foremost, because I'm sort of looking to supplement my starting pitching. You know, I'm not like you in the fact that, like, I do not want to just carry, you know, excess starting pitching. You know, and you know, again, this is league context specific. You know, in a league where I've got a bench and it's a daily lineup league where I can shift guys in and out, I like to carry a couple of extra hitters to try and increase my volume. So I don't want to be wrapped up with too many starting pitchers. And as a result, I kind of end up trying to supplement my innings with quality relief innings. You know, and really in most formats, you're able to get guys with great skills at pretty good prices. Now, you know, the Josh Haders of the world are going to be expensive and I'm not going to shop there. But, you know, maybe a bounce back from Andrew Miller is possible. I really like Ryan Pressly in Houston. It's another name that's got significant K upside.
Betances, but it'll probably be expensive.
Betances, yes. It depends on the room.
Yeah.
But those types, Chad Green is another one that's always cheap, mm-hmm. and who has fantastic ratios. I mean, the entire Yankee bullpen, right?
Yeah, basically.
Ottavino now.
Yeah.
Is fantastic. And a lot of fun to watch pitch. So, I mean, you know, there are guys out there that are capable of sort of boosting the value or the results of your starting pitching, you know, by sort of aggregating with them. And I like to sort of take advantage of that because I think it's sort of, It's certainly not a new approach. It's one that's arisen over the last few years, but it's still an approach that in most leagues you're able to incorporate without spending too much. Now, I mean, if they're in line to get save opportunities next, if somebody gets hurt, that's fantastic. Like I'm on board with that. If I've got guys with similar skills, and maybe skills wise, I like player A better, but player B's got a clearer path to saves. I might opt for player B, but you know, the skills have got to be relatively close. I'm not gonna roster, you know, Tyler Hildenberger over, you know, a really quality reliever like a Chad Green. Just because there's a world where Tyler Hildenberger gets saves at some point. It's just not my modus operandi. I'm not going to do that. Okay, so since we're both wrestling fans and the Royal Rumble was this weekend, I thought we'd have a little fun with relief pitchers and maybe do like a mini draft and do the top 30, 1 through 30, pick our relievers and just – give a quick blurb about why we took them and why we like them. So, Jay, if I gave you the first pick, so who would you take?
Yeah, I think I had to go Edwin Diaz. That's crazy thinking a Mets reliever at the top, but we saw how valuable he was to, you know, the champion of our league last year. It was really good for him. I think the Mets are going to have a ton of save chances, whether they're going to, you know, convert them all or not. But, you know, with the decent, well, really good pitching staff, they're going to hand him the ball a lot. Usually, you know, they should have a lot of leads. I think the strikeout numbers are only going to get even better coming to the National League. A lot of teams that haven't seen him. I think Diaz is the consensus number one.
Okay, I've got the next two picks, and I'm going to take Blake Treinen, podcast favorite from last year, cashed big time, you know, as a guy that was going in the 15 to 20 relief pitcher range. Nasty, nasty stuff. Good team. You know, can throw multiple innings. He can get grounders and Ks. He really took his game to a next level last year. You know, I don't see really any issue. I mean, with the grounders, obviously that defense is fantastic, at least on the right side of the infield. So, you know, I'm totally in on Blake Treinen as the second overall reliever. And then the third guy that is on my board is Aroldis Chapman. Now, there is a little bit of risk reward here with Chapman. I mean, you've got so many good relief arms in that pen that if he was to stumble, could he give up some saves? Absolutely. But the Yankees have consistently gone back to Chapman. He still shows plus skills, plus velocity.
And obviously the bullpen around him and just the whole roster, I think, are going to present quite a few save opportunities for him during the course of the year. So Chapman is my number three, and he's the guy that I would take. So, Jake, now you go back-to-back here at 4 and 5.
Yeah, I think at 4 I'd have to go Brad Hand. You know, the Indians acquired him. You know, they want him to be that stability at the back of the bullpen. I think they're still going to be a pretty good team. I think they should hand him a lot of leads. We know the stuff is really nasty. He did a great job in San Diego. So I think that's a pretty easy pick there with Brad Hand. And then the next pick, I'd probably have to go Kenley Jansen. You know, it's scary. The guy had a heart surgery. Obviously, it seems like he's doing all right. He's already throwing, and he hasn't seemed to have lost any of his stuff. He seems to be good to go. Just based on consistency alone, I think you have to go Jansen there. And he, you know, he was going probably number one overall or close to it last year. So he's dropped a few spots, but he's
still he was definitely the top reliever off the board.
Yeah. So the Dodgers, I mean, should still win at least 90 games or close to it. And I think he's going to get a ton of saves.
Okay. I would take Craig Kimbrell next. You know, I mean, years and years and years of high quality relief work, you know, high K rate, heavy save source, obviously a free agent at this point. We do not know where he's going to pitch, but he's always been a guy that he doesn't really have that multi-inning reliever, fireman sort of role. Like, he's a set it and forget it closer type. You know, I think that ultimately he ends up back in Boston, but wherever he ends up, I expect him to get the majority of the save chances and post, you know, a very high K rate with capable ERA and WHIP numbers. Yeah, the walks are a little bit concerning. Not enough that anybody else left on the board laps him. And then I think I'm looking at Roberto Osuna in Houston. I mean, again, high quality situation. Team's going to win games. You know, he was very good in Houston last year. And, you know, has essentially been an excellent relief pitcher and closer throughout his whole career. Short as it may be. Now, obviously, you've got the off-the-field concerns, but this is a guy I think that realizes that he's probably on his last legs if he has another incident like he did last year. Now, I mean, of course, the game is supposed to be fun. If you can't roster a guy that did what he did, you know, I completely understand that, but you know, to me, it's about the numbers, and this is the guy that I think ranks 7th on my board.
All right, so I get the next two. I probably go, I mean, I don't love it because they have Kella in Pittsburgh, but Felipe Vasquez is probably the guy here. He had a really nice season last year. He blew a bunch of saves, but just, you know, strikeout numbers are there, and he did his job most of the time. So I'm not in love with the pick there, but I think if in that order, if he falls to me, I'd have to take him. And then next, I'd probably have to go with Corey Knebel. I'm not worried about Hader. I really think they're going to just stick him as a lefty specialist. I think Knebel's going to get most of the saves on a good team. And I think he's going to have a lot of opportunity, and he's a good pitcher. He's got a lot of good stuff. I think I'd go Vasquez and Knebel back-to-back here.
Okay, I'm going to take two guys we talked about earlier, Raisel Iglesias and Sean Doolittle. Iglesias just got a contract extension from Cincinnati, so, I mean, I think he's somewhat safe in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has really tried to take some steps forward and compete this year, so I don't think he's going to get sold off into a situation where he's not going to get saves. He's been a consistently productive reliever since moving to the pen, and been able to stay mostly healthy. You know, he's not elite, but he's very much that second tier of closer where he's very solid, very consistent. So Iglesias is there for me. And then Doolittle, he's got a little more upside, I think, than Iglesias because of the K rate. The situation is somewhat similar. Washington is still a very competitive team, regardless of what happens with Harper. You know, the pitching staff is awesome. The lineup is still very good, even if Harper doesn't come back. So I expect the opportunities to be there. The only concern with Doolittle is the health. You know, he's been a guy that's had some health issues over the course of his career. But, you know, as far as buying elite skills and not worrying too much about the health piece, I think that this is where he slots in.
All right. My next guy is probably going to be Cody Allen. I think the Angels went out and got their guy. That's a spot where, you know, they've struggled to find that secure reliever in the back of the bullpen, and they juggled guys the last couple of years. He's a veteran reliever. I think he's going to get the job done most of the time, and I think they've got him for that, you know, job specifically. I think he's going to get every opportunity. He's pretty safe out there. So I'd definitely go Allen there. And the next one I'm thinking Kirby Yates, but I, you know, don't love the team. Don't think they're going to get that many wins. I'd probably go Leclerc just because I really liked what I saw from him last year. I had him on my team. His stuff was really good. I love the strikeout numbers. I think he's going to, you know, really settle into that role and be a solid closer this year. So I'd go Allen and Leclerc back to back here.
Okay. And I'm up with my 14th and 15th. I've got Kirby Yates. Glad you passed on him. I like him a lot. I mean, San Diego's always been a spot where it's kind of been, oh, are they going to win enough games? Are they going to win enough games? And Brad Hand has posted really good seasons there. And Kirby Yates has been a very, very good reliever in San Diego over the last couple of years. Last year, took the role, really ran with it. Plus skills, you know, I'm not terribly worried if, And San Diego, I think, is an improving squad. I think the lineup is getting a little bit better. They have some pitching in the minors, and I'm a big Matt Strom fan as well, who I think is going to go into the starting rotation this year. So I think that San Diego's got some sneaky potential. But regardless, I mean, I think that Yates is a guy that can easily save 30 games and post plus ratios. So I'm not terribly concerned there. And then I moved to Ken Giles, who had a pretty nice run to end the year in Toronto. You know, the ERA was over 4, but that was mostly due to one bad outing. He settled in there, and, you know, I think getting out of Houston was probably the best thing for him. Obviously, given the fact that he was to return in the Ozuna trade, I suspect that Toronto is going to give him every opportunity to run with the job. Yeah, homers might be an issue, so the ERA might be a little weak for a closer. You know, he might be around 3.5, but I think the volume of saves will be there. He can still strike guys out. That slider is still nasty. So, you know, and I think he's a locked-in guy, too. I don't think he's going to be a 50-50 guy. Or even a 70-30 guy. I think if Toronto gets a save chance, provided Giles doesn't implode, he's going to get that save chance. So I'll take a consistently reliable save source, even if it's not quite as pretty as we might like it to be.
All right, I'm up with 16-17. Is that correct? Yeah. So
yes,
I'd probably go Big Willie style Will Smith here. I think he settled into that role last year. He did a pretty good job. There was some talk about trading him, but he seems like he's a giant for now, so we'll see. I think they'll be decent. They're not projected to be amazing this year, but I think they'll contend for most of the season. I think he'll get a bunch of save chances, and he's pretty much the guy out there. And the next guy is a little bit of a reach, but I think it's got to be David Robertson. I think he's going to emerge as the closer for sure over Dominguez. I think the Phillies got him to be that veteran at the end of the bullpen. They're going to win a lot of games. You know, they're going to, you know, have a lot of leads, especially if they sign Harper. They're going to be a big-time team. And I think he's a guy going from the AL most of his career to the NL. A lot of guys that still haven't seen him. He's always had good stuff. I think Robertson's a good pick here.
I'm up 18 and 19. I can't let Josh Hader sit out there anymore at this point. You know, the ratios are amazing. He's going to grab a handful of saves, certainly. You know, it's not that I don't like Hader. I do. I mean, I own him in a dynasty league. You know, I'm a huge fan of his. I'm a huge fan of watching him pitch. He's probably, if not the most single devastating reliever in the game, he's definitely up there. It's just taking him as a top 10 relief pitcher is sort of a tough pill to swallow. because it means I've still got to come back and get a steady save source. But, you know, here in this scenario is ideal because if he's the 18th reliever, you know, he's my second guy and I can live with the fact that, you know, he's going to grab somewhere between 5 to 10 saves and just take the elite ratios and I'll worry about getting the saves down the line. If he's my first relief pitcher, I'm just not as crazy about it. But that has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, Hader is an amazing pitcher. He's going to produce. He's probably going to be the most valuable relief pitcher that doesn't get saves. So, you know, if you're punting saves, maybe he's your guy. But he'll definitely help you in the ratios. And then I'm going to take Archie Bradley. You know, Arizona came out. Terry Lavolo had said that Archie is going to be his guy to start the year, most likely. You know, we've seen one great season from him. Last year was sort of mediocre. But I think he's got the mindset to close. I think he'll excel in the role. I think the stuff might play up a little bit based on that situation. I know they went out and signed Greg Holland, who had an absolutely atrocious year. So, I mean, Arcee's not 100% into that role. Hirano is also there, who had a very good year last year. But Lavolo specifically mentioned Bradley over Hirano when asked. So, yeah, I think Bradley's going to get the opportunity, and I think he has a shot to run with it.
All right, next up, I kind of can't let Wade Davis sit out there any longer. I don't love the pick. He blew up a bunch of times last year, but he did lead the NL in saves. He seems like he's the only guy out there. The Rockies should be pretty good. Obviously, it's scary to have any pitcher in that ballpark, and you're going to have to live with some blow-ups, but I think at this point in the draft, he's probably the best available and you know, the most qualified to get a substantial amount of save opportunities. So I think it's a pretty easy pick there, even though it's scary. And next, I'd probably have to go Andrew Miller. I think the Cardinals are definitely going to be a team on the rise and definitely going to contend for the playoffs this year. And I think he's their guy at the end. They got him specifically for that. And he's going to, you know how much of a veteran he is. And when he gets on a roll, he's really tough to hit. He can go for a couple months and just strike out the world and be unhittable. So I think he's the guy in St. Louis. And I'm going Wade Davis and Andrew Miller, a couple of veterans, but they're in safe spots.
Yeah, I'm up at 22, and I'm going to take Sir Anthony Dominguez. I'm going to take the other end of that Phillies bullpen. You know, they sort of indicated that Robertson might be more of the fireman, but it sounds like it's going to be a shared situation. I'm okay with that. I can bank Dominguez's 15 saves. He was very good last year, good ratios, very solid work in terms of ERA. So, I mean, at worst, I've got myself a good setup guy that can find his way into some saves. At best, I've got the closer on what should be a pretty good Phillies team. And if it ends up in the middle, I'm perfectly okay with banking his, you know, 10 to 20 saves that he'll get as a part-time closer and taking the elite ratios that come with it. And then I'm going to take Trevor May. You know, the Twins added Blake Parker. There has been some speculation they may add Craig Kimbrel. I don't think they're going to get involved in Kimbrel. I can't imagine they're going to pay him. And Parker was the Angels closer last year for like a day. And then he lost the role, and then he got it back later in the year. You know, all told, Parker's a decent relief arm, but I think May's got the chance to be pretty special. He was really good at the end of last year, posting a K per nine in excess of 12 with a walk rate, I believe that was sub 2. And just overall really good results other than the fact that he gave up some homers. I think that I can buy in on May as a type that, you know, at minimum is going to be a ratio helper, but at most has the potential to quite honestly be a top 15 relief arm, if not better, if he's seeing the saves.
All right, for my next two, I have to go Matt Barnes here. I mean, we're talking about the defending world championship closer. I mean, it's only January 30th, but
he's still the guy. I mean, they haven't re-signed Kimbrel yet. If they do, obviously that'll change. But right now, I don't think I can overlook him anymore. He's going to get a ton of opportunities. We know how good that team is. And I guess, you know, you just have to take him at this point. And in a similar situation, Pedro Strop, don't love the guy, capable of blow-ups. But, I mean, if you're the Cubs' primary closer on January 30th, I'm going to take him. So I'm going Matt Barnes and Pedro Strop. I think they're the guys currently when we hit opening day. Things can happen. Guys can get traded. But I'm going to go for those two right now.
Okay, 26 and 27. First up, I'm going to go Jose Alvarado, who's currently the favorite for saves in Tampa. Now, we know, obviously, Tampa has been very creative with their bullpen usage, you know, and having the quote-unquote guy isn't necessarily a guarantee of getting all the save opportunities. But Alvarado showed some definite skills in terms of K rate and has really filthy stuff. I'm willing to take the shot that he sees 15 to 20 saves and helps me quite a bit in ratios. So he's first up. And then I'm going to take Kelvin Herrera, who signed with the White Sox. Now there's been talk of, well, you know, Herrera was hurt. Is he going to be the guy? Is Colome going to be the guy? My theory when it comes to this sort of situation is Herrera's on a guaranteed contract. He's got 2 years for whatever amount of money he has. Colome is still in arbitration. Saves inflate the cost of arbitration. If the White Sox are intending on competing, it's in their best interest to keep Colome. Well, even if they're not, it's in their best interest to keep Colome cheap and give the saves to the guy that is on the guaranteed deal, whose price and cost cannot go up. So if Herrera's healthy, I think he's the guy in Chicago. He's also a proven commodity as a closer in the major leagues. So it's not like Colome is it's not like the alternative to Colome hasn't done it before. In this case, Herrera was a reliever of equal and perhaps greater quality at his peak than Colome was. So I'm willing to roll the dice that Herrera takes that job.
All right, for my last two, 28th and 29th, couple of NL East closers. I have to go Aroldis Vizcaino here. He was really good for me in the first half last year. He kind of, you know, battled with injury and durability and a couple blow-ups late in the season, and Minter took over. As of right now, it seems like Vizcaino is the guy. I think if you obviously have to keep an eye on this in spring training and see how he looks, but I think they're going to make him the firm closer if he looks as durable as he did early, like he did last year. And my second pick here, Drew Streckenrider. I really like this guy's stuff. Marlins are not going to win a lot of games, but you know what? Anything can happen in Major League Baseball. They should be a little better than they were last year. And I think he's got the best stuff in the pen. I don't think Connolly's going to – I mean, Connolly might see a few save opportunities when there's lefties coming up in the ninth. But I think second rider's the guy. I think he's the best guy they have in the pen. And a 29th overall reliever, you could do worse.
Yeah. I sort of struggle with this last one between A.J. Minter and Hunter Strickland. You can give me Hunter Strickland, though, who was signed this week by Seattle and is the apparent favorite for saves out there. You may recall last year he took the Giants' job and pretty much ran with it, but then blew a save, punched a wall, and his season was pretty much done. They DFA'd him to start the year, and he's now signed on in Seattle. You know, Seattle's not going to be a great team. I think they may be a little underrated, but the ballpark is pretty good. Strickland has shown the ability to close before, provided he can keep his head on straight. I think that it's a job that he can pretty much run with. You know, he's sort of like Herrera in that, and Colome in that, he's not an elite K guy, but he does enough to get the job done. So, I mean, I think that he's got the opportunity to see the volume of saves out there. And that sort of puts him over Minter for me. But it is very close because I am very intrigued by Minter's
skill set, and I'm not sold on Vizcaíno. I do think that Minter's a guy that's got a decent shot to seize that role at some point this season and really run with it. But Minter has his own inconsistencies as well, and that's sort of what makes me lean towards Strickland at this given moment. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. You guys can find me on Twitter at PatrickFWO. JP will eventually set up his Twitter.
Yes.
Maybe by March.
Yeah. a lot going on right now.
Yeah. I will be back next week with bold predictions. I'm not sure if anybody will be joining me, but thanks so much for listening, guys. And I will talk to you next week.
Pat, real quick before you go.
Oh, that's right. You wanted to do Super Bowl.
I got to let it out. You want to go first?
Yeah, it's very simple for me. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Patriots, everything comes full circle. Pats, 27, Rams, 21.
Yeah, I think Belichick and Brady are the only places where the Patriots are better. I think the Rams are better totally everywhere else. The Patriots, while they've won so many Super Bowls, they should have lost more than they've won. They've never played a great, complete game as a team in these Super Bowls. Like, Brady was great last year, and they've had some great offensive and defensive performances. But as a team, they've always played good enough to win. They've never dominated. If you could buy a point, buy the point. Give me the Rams +4. Don't be surprised if they win it.
They have. Oh, come on. You got to give a formal prediction. You can't.
I'll give you a score. Interior pressure. They have the formula. The interior pressure with Donald and Sue. That's what gets Brady. They have the running game to keep him, you know, on the bench. I'll go 31-28 Rams on a late Greg the Leg field goal.
Yeah, you're just such a Jet fan.
Well, real quick. The line is only -2. I'd like the Patriots more if there was a higher line. It seems like a trap. The whole world is saying, wow, the Patriots are only given 2 points. They're such a lock. And the public's always wrong. So the Rams seem like a really sneaky pick here. And I was the guy who bet the Eagles last year. So I'm on a little bit of a roll with these Super Bowls.
Yeah, you got one.
No, I'm telling you. I've been hot.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Everybody enjoy their Super Bowl. If you're stuck in this Arctic freeze, try and stay warm, and we will be back next week.
Have a good night.